So this morning, the biscuit is part of this sermon. If you ate it already, it's because you're already digesting the sermon. If you still have it, if you can't eat biscuits, Brian and I, you talk to us, we'll help you. But the question is, how can something that was meant for pain, death, humiliation, turn into something that's so sweet? Today, this biscuit is a symbol of Jesus Christ, of his death, of his resurrection, of life. Many years ago, you would not find crosses on churches or places where Christians met. You wouldn't find them hanging around people's necks. The cross was not seen in that way. The cross was an instrument of torture, of death, of pain, of humiliation. But now, today, it means something very special to Christians. So we often think that the most important day of the year is Christmas. But back in the day, Easter was the most celebrated day in the Christian calendar. Resurrection was the most important thing. Christmas gets more airtime, but Easter is way more important. Somebody said to me the other day that Easter is the most important day in the year. I don't know. I think it's important. It's interesting as well that Easter moves. The date of Easter moves. It's never on the same day year to year. And the date of Easter is actually set by the phase of the moon. I don't know how that's done, but somebody else works that out for me. I just look on Google. But it's not set because it's a certain day on a certain year. It's, get this, it's set by heaven itself. That's pretty cool. And then, interesting thing about Easter is that in history we have many tombs. We have many graves. We have many, many famous people buried in tombs. But there's one tomb that started everything that we celebrate today, and that tomb was even empty. The resurrection didn't inspire people emotionally. It inspired people to do something radical. People, because of the resurrection, people died. They said, I believe in Jesus Christ. And they said, well, you need to renounce that. And the Christian said, we will not. We believe in Jesus Christ. And many Christians died because of their conviction. The cross and the empty tomb transforms lives. So, something sweet from something bitter. The darkest symbol, the place of shame and humiliation, became a sweet symbol. When the Romans crucified someone, they wanted people to realize that the person had done a whole lot wrong. It was a terrible way to die. It was public, it was brutal, and it was meant to destroy somebody's credibility. But when Christ died, it did the opposite. When he rose again, his dignity was intact. In fact, the Christian faith was born. Nobody who was at the cross could ever imagine what the church might look like 26 years later. Nobody back then could have thought, what will this movement look like? But here we are. Something meant for suffering was turned into something that speaks about our conviction, speaks about Christ and his sacrifice. Out of the worst moment in history, he brought the greatest gift in history.
So we hold up our biscuit. Anyone got their biscuit? You can hold it up. Hold up your biscuit. And as you hold up your biscuit, today we hold a cross that is sweet. This cross is sweet. And not because of the cross in itself was sweet, but because of what Jesus did there on the cross. The cross once meant death, as Pastor B has alluded to. Now it means forgiveness. And everyone here has had to be forgiven in one point of their lives. Now it means hope. And Jesus gives us that hope. And it means life. We get life from Jesus. And as the prophet Isaiah foretold centuries earlier, in Isaiah 53, verse 5, but he was pierced for our transgressions. He was crushed for our iniquities. The punishment that brought us peace was on him. And by his wounds, we are healed. Jesus did not die for his own sins, but rather for our sins. I went to Maritzburg this past weekend to go and visit family, and we've had bees in our chimney for a long time now, three years maybe. And I always thought that they just fly off. I thought they'd just leave. I was like, leave. We lit up the chimney, thinking they would smoke them out, and they just would not leave. So anyway, I get home, and this time around, my nephews are back, and there's just bees scattered outside the chimney, and most of them dead, on the windowsill, up the curtains, and I said, no, man, enough. So I'm going to call the beekeeper. And so I called the beekeeper, and the beekeeper came, and I was fascinated by the bees, because I also wanted to help, because, well, I'm fascinated by bees. And so what can I do to help? And also, can I have some honey? It's my honey. So he says, yeah, sure, you can have the honey. And so he went up there, and I was going to put a vacuum cleaner thing. Ooh, and then he sucks up the bees up when he's on the chimney. And then I wanted my honey. And so he said, get a bucket and make sure it's closed. And so I went and I got a bucket, and it had a lid in it. And then he went up on the roof, and I could see him getting in them like big cakes or combs. And then he kept putting them in the bucket, and the bucket got heavy, and then he gave it to me. And then he said, make sure you go inside, because the bees can smell the honey and they'll want to come chow it. And I'm just like, it makes no sense. Now I can't bring bees inside. Bees must be outside. So in my stubbornness, I kept the bees outside, and I got stung right here on my ear. Ooh. And then he left, he said he'd give the bees about an hour, and the bees would not leave. And there was a hole in the ceiling that they kept, because he closed the top and he closed the bottom, so he put them between so that they can't escape. But there was a hole in the ceiling that some of the bees that were stuck in the chimney, or some of them were returning, were escaping from this hole. And inside the house, we were just a swarm of bees all of a sudden. And so now I'm opening windows, I'm putting the fan on, and I'm in a panic mode. And so I phone him again to be like, dude, this is not working, bro, come back. And in that haste, I'm trying to get the bees out, and I got stung again on my knee and my tummy, the tummy one. My goodness. All right. And the moral of the story is, it hurt. It hurt. Those bee stings were anal. But I got my honey. And when we got home, and the girls and I were having the honey, it tasted so sweet. And then I just thought, it was worth it. It was worth it. It was worth me trying to get them and do all that stuff. And how often do we not think about the fact that for Jesus, it was worth it? It wasn't easy. It wasn't easy. But it was worth it. It was worth it for him to die for you and me. And so Pastor B, we're talking now about the bees, and we're talking about this bittersweet thing. And he said, let me give you a picture, after my picture of being stung, of how bees go out and they gather nectar and pollen from the flowers. Sometimes what they gather can be bitter and can be unpleasant. But inside the beehive, something amazing happens. The bees can transform it. What started off as something ordinary or even bitter comes out as sweet, sweet honey. Imagine trying to lick flowers to get something close to the honey. Hey, Kari, can you just see yourself licking the... Can you see yourself licking those flowers? Caleb? You want to lick a flower? No? You think it'll taste like honey? Blender. You blend it and try and have? No, it doesn't. All right? You couldn't do it. But the bee takes what it's gathered and transforms it. In a far greater way, God took the bitterness of the cross and he turned it into the sweetness of forgiveness and a new life. In the Bible, it invites us in Psalms 34, verse 8, taste and see that the Lord is good. It goes on to say, blessed is the one who takes refuge in him. The Lord is good, but we need to take action to be blessed by him. We have to taste and see. We have to take refuge. I truly believe that Jesus, it wasn't easy, but to him, it was worth it. You were worth it. You were worth it.
Now, Brian took my biscuit. He's sneaky that way. So the biscuit's a gift. It's a gift to you. You can take the biscuit. You can put it on your mantle. When people come to visit, you can go, look what I got at Easter time. Isn't it special? You can maybe hang it around your neck and go, look what I got. It's special. Or you can eat it. Taste and see that the Lord is good. The cross on a mantle, the cross around your neck is no good to you. This biscuit will add no calories to you if you just leave it in your handbag. But the minute you have it, it does something. The minute you accept it, taste and see that the Lord is good. Yet to all who did receive him, to those who believed in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. You see, we have to respond in some way to the message of Easter. We can't just look on the cross and go, gee, I hope that does something for me. We need to actively say, Lord, I want this cross to mean something in my life. I want your death and your resurrection to mean something in my life. I'm sorry about the stuff that I've done wrong. Bless me, Lord. Help me. We have to accept what he's done. It's not just going to happen by osmosis. You can't carry in this pocket, and by the end of the day, it's been eaten magically into your skin. And so that's what I want to challenge you with today. What are you going to do with the message of the cross? Is it just going to be something that's going to be on display on a mantelpiece, or is it really something that's going to change your life, that's going to change your heart? Because if it doesn't, then it's really not worth much.